My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Matthew Evans.
I look at branding as the art of facilitating and communicating passion. And when you think about brands, when you think about life in general, you tend to remember that which you're passionate about, not necessarily that which you're intellectually stimulated about. So, to sort of put it this way, rational doesn't necessarily endure. Emotional endures and goes much deeper.
Matthew Evans is the chairman and co-founder of Evans Communications. For 20 years, he has led the PR agency to serve customer-driven iconic brands in the food, spirits and wine, lifestyle, and travel and hospitality industries. He is one of the most respected authorities, authors, and thought leaders in luxury and luxury hospitality. He currently serves on the boards of the Global Virus Network, the International Hotel Investment Forum, and the International Luxury Hotel Association. He holds a BA from University of Pennsylvania, and he's a guest here on the On Brand podcast. Matthew, welcome.
Nick, thank you very much for having me.
I am thrilled to chat with you about many different things, but I always wonder, when someone has a specialty in luxury branding, luxury marketing, how did that come to be? Was that something that, is that reverse engineered looking back at who you're working with? Or is that... Or do you do that the other way and proactively seek out that luxury clients?
It's sort of a hybrid of both. I think the best way to describe it is when I first came into this business, the one thing that occurred to me is that there are a lot of passion brands that also happen to be luxury brands. But not all luxury brands are passion brands. And the other realization was that luxury brands, for the most part, didn't know how to really speak to their audiences. And they didn't necessarily know how to engage and maintain a relationship with audiences. And we saw an opportunity to be able to really focus on working with luxury brands to help them in their brand articulation, in their ethos, and their connectivity. And that's what really began this specialization, if you will, in terms of how we work with luxury, premium, and prestige brands.
Well, that's interesting, because that's kind of the other thing that has always kind of jumped out to me. Luxury is an odd label. In some industries, it's a great fit. Others might think, I don't know if that's what we are. Is that off-putting? I love the idea of a passion brand. Say more about that.
Well, Our approach is, if you can't get truly enamored and engaged and impassioned and inspired by a brand, then in many ways, opportunity lost. So I look at branding as the art of facilitating and communicating passion. And when you think about brands, when you think about life in general, you tend to remember that which you're passionate about, not necessarily that which you're intellectually stimulated about. So, you know, to sort of put it this way, rational doesn't necessarily endure. Emotional endures and goes much deeper.
Well, I think that's especially interesting right now as we look at, you know, a couple years into this this pandemic thing and looking at the impact on brands there. And I really think that's where what you said just now in talking about endurance, those brands that really mean something to someone are the ones that we're going to hang on to even in challenging times. So from your perspective as an outside resource to passion brands, I don't want to say, is it something, because my question was going to be, is it something you can reverse engineer and someone shows up, knocks on Evan's door and says, you know, that's who we are, but I'm not sure how we fill that box of passion. Is that something you can come at the other way?
Yeah, yes and no. You know, you can take a look at how an audience engages with a brand and begin to be able to determine, is it rational based or is it passion based? And what our job really is to tease out what is the passion basis for the engagement of a consumer with a brand. Because if you look at it from the brand's perspective, a lot of times they think that every engagement is passion based, when in reality, that's not the case. So we have to look at it from the outsider's perspective or from the consumer's perspective as to what is it that is connecting them with a brand. What is it that resonates? What is it that inspires? What is it that impassions? And then how do we begin to both codify it and amplify it?
That's interesting too, that dichotomy of the rational versus the passion. And you know, loving gray areas as I do, is there an overlap, an interplay between those two where, you know, we are a brand that serves a very rational purpose, but really behind all of that is this passion under the surface?
Absolutely, because there are many brands that serve a rational purpose, but it's how do you dig beneath the surface to identify the passion points that really might have gotten obscured or lost in the rational context, if that makes sense. Because if you think of brands that are product brands, the products serve a real and rational purpose, but that doesn't mean you can't get connected to it on a fundamentally emotional basis. You know, if you look at whether it's Ford or Chevy or any of the car brands, and I'll give you an example. When Cadillac decided that they wanted to rebrand and transform their image, they came out with a marketing and advertising campaign that asked a fundamental question, which was, when was the last time your car turned you on? And I thought, okay, they're now beginning to go from the rational to the emotional. And they asked a very good question that I think in many ways began to catalyze the transformation of the Cadillac brand.
Well, and automotive seems like an easy place to see that spectrum of the rational to the passion, and that's kind of what had ended up happening to Cadillac, especially as the luxury automotive brand space exploded. They were sort of slipping back down into the rational, you know, a slightly nicer vehicle from GM as opposed to this passion. So just asking that simple question, I think, like you said, highlights that movement that they needed to make.
Exactly. And it also, quite frankly, made people think that a car is not just serving a rational purpose of I'm driving it, it's getting me from here to there. It should be an experience that is something to be enjoyed and ultimately something to be savored.
So speaking of different industries where we're enjoying things, savoring things, and also recently experiencing disruption, in your work in the travel and hospitality space, with this inflection point that we find ourselves in, how do brands that speak to that passion find a way around this?
That's a really good question. Because right now, when you look at the consumer mindset, there are various different things that you know consumers are feeling today: frustration, pent up demand to travel, not wanting to be told to mask, to socially distance. So travel brands really need to not just focus on communicating in terms of upholding the highest tenets of safety and cleanliness, but they need to be able to communicate trust. They need to be able to engage wanderlust. But ultimately, today, people want to travel for purposes of well-being. They want purposeful travel that is contributory to their lives, their soul, and their well-being, which is really, you know, if you combine it, it's all about mental and physical wellness and well-being. And for travel to break through this cacophony of cleanliness and being safe in the midst of a pandemic, they need to convey and touch the passion points in consumers that want to indulge in travel, but at the same time, they want travel that's purposeful and that contributes to their wellness and well-being. And that's what we're seeing that travel brands are beginning to do.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcasts.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show. So that was a really interesting point about travel brands and trust and purposeful travel at what's a confusing time. And I think it sort of highlights a challenge that many marketers, both in travel and beyond, even as looking at people at varying stages of normal. And you talked about communicating that trust. Is that seems like it's harder to do when we have such a wide spectrum of where customers are, because even something as simple as we're gonna show an ad, and it's gonna have people in masks on, and you may have people that's a big turn off because, as you said, they're tired of this. On the other side of that, there might be people that are on the fence, and that's a big turn on, and oh, thank goodness, I want to do something, but I want to feel safe. How do you thread that needle?
It's interesting because I think that I don't necessarily want to see imagery of people wearing masks and going on vacation. I think the imagery, the content that is powerful is, give me a shot of a beautiful beach. That's a very, personal shot, very tight shot. Give me a great visual of food. Give me a great visual of relaxation, of mental wellness. It's not modifying the visuals because of the pandemic. It's actually beginning to understand what is the consumer looking for when they travel, and how do you capture that in terms of content and be able to engage them with the content. And it can't be push, it has to be pull. If it's push, it's going to be antithetical to the purpose.
Well, that's such a great insight, and I think it'll be really helpful to folks too, because as you said that, I'm sitting here thinking, well, duh, this isn't an ad for a mask. This is an ad for a beach, for the restaurant, for all the places and experiences that so many have been missing and are eager to get back to. It's again, not selling the mask. So it's kind of a rewind. So much is confusing, and we're all turned around in all of this, but almost a rewind to marketing 101. This is the benefit. This is what your consumer is after, even in the heart of all of this.
Especially in the heart of all of this, because you have to start with a basic premise, and the premise is that the consumer is going to trust that you're going to establish the standards that are appropriate in terms of their health, safety, and well-being. But now you have to go beyond it, and it goes back to communicating and conveying emotive experiences that are going to capture the consumer's curiosity, that convey a sense of mystique, that engage them, again, not on a rational level, but on an emotional level. If you can touch their soul and connect, you've now just created a very, very powerful conduit that is so much more than showing an individual in a mask.
That's such a great insight too, and I think also your especially now point, and looking at the industries that you work in, with travel and hospitality, and with food, spirits, and wine, these are things that people, back to the beginning of our conversation, talking about passion. I'd say, some people have moved even closer to that passion as well. I know you know, I feel like my own cooking and wine and spirits game in the midst of this time where we, you know, haven't had as much to do as we have been before, has been raised as well. Is there a way marketers should be turning the volume up on some of that interest and appeal?
I don't know if it's turning the volume up or listening better. You know, marketers are really good at turning the volume up.
As evidenced by my question.
Well, you know, I think that marketers are really good at saying, here's the message I want to deliver, and pushing it through, as opposed to, what is it that my audience is telling me that they want? And modifying the conversation accordingly. And it's also, it's not message-driven, it's conversation-driven. So I think to answer your question, what we need to do now, better than we ever have, and we have tools to do it, is listen. Listen to what the clients are telling us, the consumers telling us, on an emotional level, number one. Number two is understand what the pandemic psychographic is all about. I've been told that I have to, you know, fundamentally socially distance, wear a mask, and in some cases quarantine. So while I have, through Zoom, Teams, I have the ability to communicate. Am I connecting? And the likelihood is I'm not. So I'm in many offsetting that lack of connection by developing passions at home, whether I'm baking, whatever the case may be. So it's beginning to understand the connection deficit, and also understand what, you know, what consumers are doing because of that connection deficit. How do you restore the connection and begin to understand the passion that needs to be reinvigorated today? Does that answer the question?
I think so. Again, I'm just still laughing at the fact that I even phrased it as turning up volume versus listening. And one of my favorite examples that you've actually reminded me of, as we were chatting beforehand, you mentioned my interview with Bill Samuels Jr. and listening to your people. And, you know, talk about the fun part of keeping your customers close, and even with Maker's Mark and looking at their ambassador program. But he told a story on that interview that I loved, and it's a story that involves them and a bump in the road of considering reducing the proof of their spirit, and that their ambassadors, those same fun loving fans with card carrying members of the brand. But they kind of rose up in defiance of that, and Bill told this story with, you know, you could hear the smile on his face, because he said it saved us what it took, you know, New Coke a year to learn, is that was such an important listening point, and that's so key.
It's, you know, at the time, we communicated with our ambassadors with complete transparency. And the vehemence and immediacy of the response was overwhelming. But it was then that we knew what needed to be done. But once we got past it, what we tried to understand was, why were they so vehement? Why were they so, you know, why was this a exponentially growing crescendo of negativity saying, you know, you can't do this and you shouldn't do this? And what we found out was something that we didn't expect, which is, you don't mess with Americana. And fundamentally, we never really thought of Maker's Mark as Americana. And what we found out subsequently was when you have something that has become institutional in its perception as representing the best of America, the best of a category, in this case, bourbon, you don't mess with it. And if you do mess with it, you are going to have the clouds part and the heavens fall down on you. And that's exactly what happened. But, you know, one of the things that I love about Maker's Mark is it's a very humble, self-effacing brand. As Bill said a long time ago, you know, we don't take ourselves too seriously. The only thing we take seriously is how we make our bourbon. And he is absolutely right. And so it would have been antithetical for us to think, oh, my God, Maker's Mark is part of the Americana landscape, because that's not the way Maker's Mark thinks.
Yeah.
But that's how we found out the vehemence of that response.
Trying to remember my history here, bourbon is an American invention.
That's correct.
And boy, I'm having trouble thinking of a more iconic brand in the space in terms of taste, quality, and even the visuals too. So, huge fan, and thank you for that great example and for reminding me of a brand that makes me smile. People always flip that back around on me. And I'm caught in the headlights, but it's my turn to get to ask you, Matthew, for a brand that has made you smile recently.
You know, at a time where I think we all need to smile a lot more, there are actually two. One is Uber Eats, because we've all been sort of captive at home. And Uber Eats has put a different kind of lens on what is fundamentally a you know, meal delivery service or a delivery service in general. And how they did it with that humor, but also the poignancy, is something that truly makes me smile. The other is Publix. Publix is a chain of supermarkets in the South and Florida. And they are really positioning their brand from a lifestyle perspective and how it contributes to your lifestyle. And the programming, the marketing, the advertising they've done warms my heart, makes me smile. So when you ask the question about what makes me smile, it's a brand that tugs at my heartstrings, but also has that sense of humor and sometimes that sense of irreverence.
Well, I love that you gave us multiple smiles and then even went a step further and defined what it is in a brand that makes you smile. Because when that stumps people, I always say you can go any direction you want. It can be heartwarming. It can be humor. It can be, I even say, it could be like a shaking your head, I can't believe what they just did smile. Very few have taken me up on that. Our smiles are mostly positive. Matthew, where can we go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
You can go to our website, which is www.evins.com. And it'll tell you all about the kind of work that we do, our philosophy, and a little bit about me.
Awesome. Well, we'll link up to that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. And speaking of that URL, we've also reorganized the podcast there, so now it's easier to find episodes with folks like Bill Samuels Jr., because his episode is under the big button at the bottom of the page. We've got some categories there that says leading brands. So to hear the Maker's Mark story, head there. Matthew, thanks for being on brand with us.
Nick, thank you so much. I have really enjoyed our conversation, and I enjoy listening to your podcast. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.